The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 372. On the podcast today, I have CEO of Kibo Mining. That's K-I-B-O, Louis Kutsi. Now listen, this company has a huge amount of potential in the country they're in, and it's definitely worth putting on your watch list. And if you need convincing, Louis will go through three reasons why you should put the company on your Vox Markets app watch list. And then you get news from the company coming out whenever they release it. Also on the podcast, I have CEO of Challenger Acquisitions at CHAL, Mark Gustafsson. Talks about the ambition for the company. And they're in this unusual sector, but very interesting sector of giant observational wheels. Yeah, so worth listening out for. Again, Mark gives us three reasons why we should put this company, Chal, on our watch list. So listen out for that. Also on the podcast, full-time investor, Wheelie Dealer. And he said he's been having a rough time a bit lately in the markets, and they are quite volatile, including today. Very volatile. And Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about lots of things, including the Black Cabby Trader, his mate. Plus, he also covers Just Eat, who came out with some cracking results today. Worth checking that out. And also, I dedicate this podcast to someone who gave me a 5-star review and a cracking review on iTunes, now up to 142 5-star reviews in the top 10 globally of What's Hot on Investing Podcasts. So if you go there and give me a review and rating, I will read it out and dedicate a podcast to you. Today it's by Sierra 1117. I'll read that out later, but thank you very much for going there, taking the time, and giving me that review.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Kibo Mining, that's K-I-B-O, Louis Kutsi. Thanks for joining me, Louis.
Good afternoon, Justin. Nice talking to you again.
Yeah, nice talking to you. Nice to meet you at the UK Investor Show. Now, Louis, I always like to go back to the start for new people listening or new investors to the game. Tell us what Kibo's about, please, Louis.
Well, in a very brief, as brief as I can be, Kibo is a diversified commodity portfolio, single country focused in Tanzania, where we are the biggest mineral rights holders. Three flagship projects in various stages of advancement. The Mbeya Coal to Power project, which is our main flagship project, and our Imweru Gold project, and as well as our Aneti Nickel project. And then we also have a couple of joint ventures with Metal Tiger.
Okay, now take us through the update day. To me, of course, as the market's in a heck of a sell-off today anyway, so any market today is like, you know, swimming against the current. But tell us about the announcement today, which was concerning the results for the power definitive feasibility study for the Mbeya Coal to Power project.
Yes, Justin, it's definitely probably the most important announcement that we've made so far on that project. As we've stated in the RNS as well, this is a project, or this announcement that we put out today is really important in the sense that power definitive feasibility study is a cornerstone in the development of the project, but it's also a very critical milestone, because if we did not reach the point where we are today, then we can't move forward. Everything else builds on what we announced today. But secondly, and more importantly, is if it wasn't positive results, we would have had difficulty going forward. Now, the results that we received and which we've announced shows that this project is feasible in all aspects, all the various disciplines or dimensions that we tested. We've indicated that we expect that the results will also have a very positive influence on the subsequent rework or update of the financial model. And we've also, and this is quite important, we've also indicated that we, by receiving this feasibility report, we're now ready to commence with the final stage of the bankable or the integrated bankable feasibility, and then obviously the update of the financial model. So it's really important in many ways, but I think to summarize, it is really important in the sense that we now definitively know that this project is feasible. In fact, in certain ways, I can even say more than feasible. And the second point why it's so important is that it gives us that next stepping stone. It allows us to go to that next level in terms of the final stages of the feasibility work.
Okay, so specifically, what is that next level, Louis?
Well, the next level we'll be talking about now is the final stage, the final phases of the feasibility work. In other words, the final work that we are doing before we commence with financing or financial close, with a financial close process and procedure.
Yeah, and this is hugely important, isn't it, for the area there in Tanzania? I mean, it will generate, you know, a lot of positives for the local economy. And like I said, because of this, obviously the authorities are right behind it, aren't they?
Well, it is. I mean, we see a tremendously strong support from the Tanzanian government. As I've said in many interviews in recent, or many of my recent interviews, we've never seen the support so strong as what it is now. And it's obvious. This project gives them the best of all worlds. It addresses the immediate energy needs, it alleviates the problems with regard to that, but more importantly, it allows them to get on with their socio-economic development program, specifically in the south. It is one of the main catalysts for the southern development, or the development of the southern corridor. So it is a hugely important project, and therefore really strategic in terms of the broader socio-economic and development agenda of the government.
Yeah, it's probably nearly impossible to say this, but at the moment you're around about 18 million market cap. I mean, you know, say 5 years down the line, if everything goes your way there and you do what you say you're going to do, where do you hope to be, Louis?
In terms of market cap?
Yeah.
Well, again, it's really, really difficult to say, but I mean, let's try and use something that is at least founded in some factual basis. If you look at the current NPVs, the NPVs that we've already published for these projects, and if you put a 50% discount of that, we should still be a market cap of around about $200 million today, not even in the future. So what is the future going to be? You can only imagine for yourself if we are talking about $200 million today.
Yeah, wow. Okay, well, listen, Louis, if anyone needs any convincing as to why they should put Kibo Mining on their Vox Markets watch list, what would the three reasons be?
I think the critical reason at the moment is this is Kibo is a company that's got a properly diversified portfolio in a country with a really good track record in terms of development of mining projects. We have gone, and in the second place, we've not only acquired these projects in a good address like Tanzania, but we've also gone quite a distance in de-risking them and in developing them to a point where you have tangible value that you can attribute to it and that you can attach to it. And I think it's also the fact that in spite of difficult markets, in spite of difficult times and big sell-offs like we see again today, we've been able and managed to keep on growing the value consistently throughout these difficult times.
Marvellous, Louis. Lovely to chat to you, and no doubt you'll have some more news out very soon, so I look forward to chatting to you then.
Thanks a lot. Looking forward to that.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Executive Officer of Challenge Acquisitions. That's CHAL ticker. It's Mark Staffston. Thanks for coming back on, Mark.
Great. Thanks, Justin. I appreciate it.
And I've got to say, you know, thank you because you're in Vancouver. It's like 5:30 in the morning there. It's afternoon here. So I appreciate it. Are you generally, you know, an early riser?
I am. I like getting up in the morning. Plus, it works with the European time zones as well too.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It's always nice to hear a CEO who's an early riser. What ring the alarm bells for me is if a CEO says, "No, I don't get up till midday," pretty much. So it's always nice to hear you're up and at 'em quite early. So, Mark, for anyone who didn't hear the last podcast and or a new listener, can you explain what you do there at Challenger Acquisitions?
Sure. Challenger Acquisitions is a main board listed company on the London Stock Exchange. And we have a company called Starneth. If you think of the London Eye, you have a pretty good idea of what we're about. We have the engineering firm, which is really the original project manager for the London Eye. And we have a series of projects, 25 in total in our pipeline, which we want to build giant observation wheels just like the London Eye. So if you think of the London Eye, then you get a pretty good idea of what Challenger is all about.
Yeah, exactly. So Starneth, so how does the revenue work? So Starneth goes in there, they consult, they do everything, design. Well, if I take us through the revenue model here, how do you get revenue from this apart from, you know, because there are a couple of revenue streams, aren't there?
You bet. The Challenger model is really twofold. One is the project management revenue from the Starneth side. So Starneth, they're the group of engineers and designers in the Netherlands, which will project manage each of these projects. So they will have design, engineering, and project management revenue. And typically, Justin, those are significant revenues. Those are $100 million dollar or pound or euro type projects that will be brought in over a 2-3 year construction period. So that's one side of it. And then the second side of it is Challenger really looks to take an equity stake in some of these wheels. And then once these wheels become operational, that's when Challenger starts to receive some of the profit sharing or dividends from the cash flow that's generated from these giant observation wheel projects.
Okay, and they're hugely popular. You know, I mean, I was in London, in fact, for the UK Investor Show in Westminster, and even early in the morning, there are people queuing up to get on these wheels, you know. And so at the moment, which are you involved with? Which wheels?
We're actually involved with the New York wheel, which the engineering work on that side is just finalizing itself now. It's under construction as we speak, so it'll open up sometime in mid to late 2017. So that work is just finishing up because they've spent about $220 million of the $500 million U.S. on it. So that's been a very active project for us. And then we've got 25 other projects in our pipeline that we're working on. And, you know, it looks like Jakarta would be the first project. Justin, that one's just waiting for financing from the developer to be finalized. And then we'll start that. And then we've got a host of other projects in the pipeline as well, too.
Wow, 25 other projects. And of course, you say that in the pipeline. As to what level of agreement do you have on these kind of projects then?
Yeah, Justin, it varies. It takes quite a bit of time for these projects to come to fruition, anywhere from 1 to 5 years. So some are in the initial discussions with the developers, some are in final stages. We're quite confident, though. We've stated publicly that we'll be able to deliver at least one of these project management deals every calendar year. So we're quite confident that there's going to be a significant project delivered on the Starneth front every year.
Okay. And as far as revenue is concerned there, so you get paid an initial sort of, you know, design consultancy fees through Starneth, and then you take an equity stake. And what kind of stake is it, and how much do you, you know, hope to generate revenue from these, you know, giant observation wheels?
Yes, it's the wheels. I think, as you know, the London Eye really generates significant operating cash flow, and what we have on the New York wheel is an example. Our strategic stake in there is 3%. We typically will look for larger stakes than those in the other wheels. We came in kind of at the 11th hour and had a chance to invest in the New York wheel, and we did so in the spring of last year. So we feel pretty fortunate to have a strategic stake in that. Typically, though, we'll look for a 10, 20, 30% stake in these types of wheels. And then as they become operational, that's when the cash flow from those wheels starts to flow back. And Justin, the key to that point is that these wheels have a lifespan of 40, 50 years and greater. So it's a significant annuity stream that flows back to Challenger. And that's ultimately what we're looking for. It's a nice long-term cash flow stream from these wheels.
Yeah, and size-wise of these wheels, I'm just thinking, you know, how big is a New York one? Is it the same size as London and the one in Jakarta as well? What's the size of these? Are they all the same kind of size?
Well, most people, when they come to London, they go back to their cities, and they would like to build a wheel just like the London Eye or bigger, of course. Mm. The London Eye is 135 meters, and the New York wheel is about 50% bigger than that.
Wow.
The Jakarta one will be a similar size, and typically the London Eye is being used as a sort of a base model now, and most people want to build one similar to that size in their cities.
Yeah, it's quite annoying for Londoners. You know, the first people doing it, and then all of a sudden you get Americans coming over and other people coming. So yeah, we want to do that bigger and better. But it's good for you guys, I suppose. So essentially, at the moment, run about a sort of 4 million market cap company you are. Where do you see that? What's your ambition there, Mark, with Challenger Acquisitions?
Well, we see a nice growth story over the next couple of years as we start to deliver these project management projects on our Starna side. We see significant revenue and cash flow from that. Those are going to generate some really nice numbers in the public company. And then as these projects get completed, and they take 2 to 3 years to complete, Justin, as they get complete, then we'll start to see some cash flow from these wheels. But we're going to deliver on one project every year on the Starnest side. So we're going to see a nice growth in our revenue and cash flow side just from that. So we see Challenger as a really, really significant growth stock over the next 3 to 5 years, and then ultimately we'll start to receive that annuity type income from the wheels, sort of years 5 and onwards.
Okay.
That's how we see it.
Yeah. And until you get those revenues, how are you funding yourself, Mark?
We've been raising cash through our convertible notes, and we've had some pretty good support on that. Last year, 2015, we raised about $3 million with convertible notes. This year so far, we've raised about $2 million. So we're in pretty good shape from that perspective, and that's keeping us nice and liquid until our projects on the Starna side kick in.
Yeah. Well, I had a question. Someone did tweet me a question here. So and I don't know if you can answer this, but they said, "What is the funding situation with Chal, and will they need to raise funds in the near future?"
Oh, Justin, we're a growth company, so you always need capital. So there's always the need for capital. We just have to manage that properly so that you don't have excess dilution. I'm a shareholder myself, and I've recently picked up another 100,000 shares last week. So I'm very sensitive to dilution because I'm a shareholder myself, and you just have to balance that off against the capital requirements of the business.
Yeah. Well, I saw that you bought. It's always nice to have, see the CEO with skin in the game there. It shows commitment, I suppose. But okay, Mark, it's very interesting. You're very unusual as a business, and like I said, everyone's seen these wheels. They know how effective they are and how popular they are. So it's definitely a huge market out there. If you can convince an investor listening now to put you on their watch list, what are the three reasons?
Justin, the three reasons would be primarily because we have the Starneth group of engineers. We own 100% of Starneth. So we've got the go-to leaders in the world in the design and engineering of these giant observation wheels. We have a pipeline of 25 projects that's going to deliver some very, very robust revenues and cash flows. And we have the start of our portfolio of equity stakes in giant observation wheels with the start is our equity stake in the New York wheel. So those are kind of the three reasons. It's the Starneth side where we've got the go-to leaders in the world. We've got the nice pipeline with 25 projects in it. And we've got the start of our equity stakes that we're building in these wheels, which serves us in the long term.
Marvelous, Mark. Thank you for taking time out to chat to me. And, do come on again when you have some more news, as I'd love to chat back to you again then.
Great. Thank you for your time, sir.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is full-time private investor Wheelie Dealer. You all right, fella?
Hi, Justin. Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, well, do you know what? We're having a bit of a nightmare. And start of May, they say sell in May and come back St. Ledger Day. Last year, I didn't do that. And I was fully invested. And the market pretty much tanked in the summer. And then I had a bit of a Christmas rally. Then started this year, it tanked again. So I've put a reminder 4 times in my calendar this April, just gone, to say, trim stocks. And I've done that. And I'm sitting...
You've managed to do it, yeah. I did notice on Twitter that you'd said you'd sold a few things. I thought that's probably a wise move.
Yes, well, exactly. I done it. I'm about 75% in cash, so I'm all good to go, you know. So
that is excellent. Yeah, I mean, you played that brilliant. I mean, it's funny, this selling May thing's funny because, you know, so many people sort of say, oh, yeah, you know, don't listen to it, it's a load of rubbish. But when you actually look at what has happened since something like 1990,
yeah,
there's only two or three occasions where it hasn't actually sold off in May. So it's actually becoming a more reliable thing. And clearly this year, you know, the evidence of the market today and yesterday, selling at the end of April was a very wise thing to do.
Yeah, well, I heard the guy who's a writer for Investors Chronicle say this last year. And last year, it was top of the market pretty much. So I thought this is going to keep going higher because, you know, when we're rallying, the sentiment is such that everyone's quite bullish. And I thought,
yeah, that's the thing. Everyone gets so euphoric and we're all excited. It's like, oh, this bull run's going to go forever.
Yeah.
But they don't. They don't, do they? They never do.
No, exactly. We did it. And oddly, we did hit a yearly high, you know, in the FTSE in April. Yeah. So whenever
the S&P has got really high again, hasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so whenever we hit that high, always be away, I think. And so how's your portfolio doing anyway? What's happening?
Well, you know, linked to what we've just been discussing. I mean, I basically timed things really badly. What I did is, if you remember when we spoke, you know, probably back in January, February, and markets were just awful. I knew the Brexit vote was coming up. I knew that selling May would be coming up. And it seemed like things had just sold off far too early. So I put on some FTSE 100 shorts and I sold a few things to try and hedge my position.
Yeah.
And of course, as it's turned out, that's been the worst flipping thing to have possibly done, because the markets, it turned out almost like the worst possible scenario for me. You know, whenever I do any trade, I always think, well, what will happen if this happens? What will happen if that happens? You know, you sort of run through various scenarios. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing that could have happened for me on my shorts was it to rally like it did, and it flipping well happened.
Yeah.
So I've been hit, you know, quite hard by the fact that I've had these shorts running, but of course, in the last couple of days, they're suddenly coming back to me. So you know, the position for me has improved a lot in the last couple of days. But the other thing that's hit me, I reckon for the year so far, I'm down about 15%.
Yeah.
Which is pretty bad. And it's definitely the worst start I've had to a year, almost as long as I can remember, really.
Yeah,
the other thing that's hit me is that last year, I had some really good performers. Things like Spru Aegis, SPRP, Tristel, TSTL. I made massive gains on those. But, you know, it's that classic problem of, do you top slice or do you run your winners? I decided to run those. And then, lo and behold, I get hit with profit warnings on both of them this year. And that has really spanked my portfolio. And I've had the same problem with SIV. I've had some things like 32 Red, TTR, and SGP, Supergroup, where they haven't had profit warnings, but they've drifted off massively.
Yeah.
You know, and they were big holdings for me. So a lot of my big holdings have really suffered.
So let's go through.
It's not been fun.
Yes. So your portfolio, how many stocks are you holding at the moment?
I've got a lot of stocks. I always do. I mean, I've got 43 in my main ISA. And then I've got another 12 in my income portfolio.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And so how have you changed now your strategy in any way? What are you thinking about doing as a result?
I mean, that's the interesting thing. You know, I've pretty much stuck to my guns. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the right thing to do. I mean, I think the hedging was the right thing to do with the Brexit vote coming. My mistake, if there is a mistake, or there's a lot of hindsight bias and outcome bias, my mistake, if anything, was to go too early. But I think with the way things are playing out, those hedges are actually going to help me a lot now. And I think with the Brexit vote coming up, we've discussed this before, I think what we'll find is that the markets will be pretty uncertain and are going to drift probably lower running up to the Brexit vote. And it'll probably be in the sort of last week or so that we'll get the absolute low point. And I think whatever the Brexit result is, we will see a rally because the markets like the certainty.
Yeah, yeah. I believe that. I think, you know, your shorts are good for at least the Brexit and maybe, you know, a couple of weeks after. And then, you know, and hopefully we'll see a turnaround then after the summer and a nice little rally.
Well, because I sort of feel that once the Brexit vote has happened, if we vote to leave Europe, I suspect there'll be a small rally, you know, but it'll be some certainty, so we'll get a little bit of a rally. I think if we vote to remain, we'll get a hell of a rally. Yeah. I think things will absolutely rock it.
Yeah.
So, but either way, I think we'll get a rally. So I think the trick will be to obviously, we've got to see how the markets go, but I suspect the markets will get really low just before the Brexit vote, maybe in the week before, 2 weeks before. That's probably the time to close your shorts.
Yeah, yeah. It's odd, you know, because I said a while back, you know, we knew about this Brexit thing a while back, and I said, I'm going to be trimming positions, I'm going to be, you know, going to more cash. And a couple of people said, well, why are you talking the market down? I said, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I just want, if it does happen, I don't see it as a doomsday scenario. I see it as a good opportunity to buy stocks at a lower level, and that's all I'm saying. And I think, what I didn't have, I would have liked to have bought more stocks in January, February, or topped up on some, and I didn't have the cash. And I thought, oh, it's a silly mistake to make, you know?
And you've done really well, because, I mean, things like your RDSB trade was absolutely brilliant. You know, you started, you know, okay, you sort of, you had the risk of catching a falling knife. You started nibbling early, but you did the right thing to build it up slowly, you know, to get a nice big position. And that's worked brilliant for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's where most of the cash has come from. I was overly exposed in that, and now I've trimmed down massively. But
it was a good play, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because we know the dividend on Shell hasn't been cut since World War II. No director of Shell is going to put that at risk.
Yeah.
You know, it's career suicide. They'd be gone straight away. So it's interesting today that Shell have had results, and the divvy's been held.
Yeah,
no
great. Yeah. And I saw it as, you know, I took an abnormal position because I thought we're in abnormal times. When's the last time, you know, we saw oil go to like $27 a barrel? I thought that's really oversold. And I was looking at the chart on Roald Dahl Shell, and even on a weekly or monthly level, you know, we were, RSI was really oversold. And I could see it look back. It hadn't been so oversold like that in ever since. You know, I thought, this is...
I love that RSI. It's one of my favourite indicators.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one I love on a weekly FTSE 100 or a weekly S&P 500, sorry, a daily, actually, watch those RSIs, because, you know, if they're up at 70 or near that, 60, 65, 70, it's time to sell the FTSE, time to sell the S&P. If they're down at 30, 35, it's time to be buying. Yeah. And it works incredibly well. I mean, a lot of people poo-poo these indicators, but I find they're absolutely, the RSI especially, is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, yeah,
love
it. I mean, especially if you look on, for stocks, I'm digging, you know, if you look at a long-term holder.
Each stock has its own sort of way of doing the RSI,
what
I mean? The RSI fluctuates for each stock, does it differently. I mean, some of the smaller things can get up to RSIs of 90 and as low as 10, you know, but that would never happen on a FTSE 100 stock.
Yeah, and I think...
And if you learn how they move, really.
Yeah, I think if you look at a stock, for example, a Roald Dahl Shell, and put on a weekly or monthly chart, you will not see a lot of oversold, sort of areas on the RSI. It will not go below 30 a lot, and it did happen recently, and I thought that, if anything, is
a buy signal. That's telling me
something. Yeah. Okay, definitely. So stocks-wise, I mean, what are you bullish on at the moment? Are you looking at any stocks and thinking, I quite like that?
Funny enough, I actually bought something yesterday, which is a bit of a miracle, because I haven't really been buying at all this year.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been incredibly quiet. But I actually bought yesterday some GPM, Golden Prospect Precious Metals.
Okay.
And the simple reason is gold broke out last week. You know, it went above that $1,284. It's interesting, it's fallen back in. I know it's just before our call, I think it was about $1,280. So it's fallen back inside.
Yeah.
By the simple fact that it broke out and it went above $1,300, it's telling us gold is bullish.
I
think... You know, I wasn't sure up until, you know, last sort of couple of weeks, I wasn't sure whether this gold rally was real or not. You know what I mean? There was still a chance it could have failed.
Yeah, so I...
Even though we've had things like golden crosses and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, with that breakout the other day, I think it's a genuine article. And a lot of these gold stocks are absolutely booming.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good place to be. The thing about GPM is it's actually an investment trust of gold miners.
Ah.
So you don't have that exposure to one individual miner.
Yeah.
It was interesting today that RRS, you know, Randgold, they fell this morning because they had some production issues or whatever. I didn't read the detail, but it had some sort of issues. And this is the problem with individual gold companies, is that you know, they... you could have a mine flood tomorrow and you can forget it. Your investment's absolutely killed. Yeah. Whereas with something like GPM, you get some element of mining leverage, you know, because it's not just directly invested in gold, i.e. if gold goes up 10%, GPM may go up 15% or 20%.
Yeah.
So you've got that leverage, which is nice, but you don't have anything like the risk of just going for individual plays.
Yeah, yeah. What's a good little stock to have? I look at it, it's very bullish as well. All the moving averages are going in the right direction.
Isn't it?
You know?
Chart.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's a beautiful, yeah. So I mean, that's an interesting one, you know.
And it's a small cap. It's got a small cap as well. It's in 19...
Yeah, I think it's actually fully listed, but it is quite small.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I can't remember. What's the market cap? You got it
there?
It's
about 19, it's saying. 19 million.
Yeah, it's quite small, and it's pretty illiquid. I mean, it's interesting because I did it on a spread bet yesterday simply because I didn't have any cash in my ISA accounts. I did it on a spread bet, and it was actually quite hard to buy it in any sort of size.
Oh, okay.
You know, so it is obviously quite illiquid.
Yeah. And is there any other stocks you're looking at?
Well, the other ones I think look really interesting. I mean, this is one we've discussed before on the call is NPT, NetPlay TV.
Yeah.
Now, on my website, I've done a blog that's really, really detailed about it. So anyone can go on my website and see that. What makes that really interesting is that I think it's about 19th of May, or it might have been changed to later, 31st of May, they're actually doing a special dividend. And as long as you buy before those dates, you qualify for the special dividend. So you actually are getting something like 10% discount on the price today. So even though they're 10 pence roughly to buy them now, you're really only paying 9p because you're going to get 10% back.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's quite an interesting one. The other one, I think, and it's in the same sort of area, is TTR, 32 Red. It's another online gambler. It went up to about 160 or something like that a few months back, and it's fallen right off, and it's back down. It was 121 when I looked just before the call.
Yeah.
But that's on a forward PE of 8.
Yeah.
You're getting a dividend, forward dividend of nearly 3%. But the thing is, they give special dividends a lot. And they've got a huge cash pile. It's something like 12 million, I think, in cash.
Yeah.
So, you know, that could be quite nice.
Yeah, well, I did hold this for a while. Do you know what? And also, just going back to the chart here, it is nice there because, like I said, they were oversold but when it went below 120. And now it's bounced back into that safe area there. And
it's really stabilising again, doesn't it? I think it's building a bit of support base, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it could start to move out of that again. So that's one. I mean, the caveat at the moment is with what we've discussed with the Brexit vote and stuff, I wouldn't be crazily buying anything. I think people need to be, you know, a little bit careful. Maybe with the gold miners, you can be a little bit more brave because gold is a good, you know, it acts as a bit of a safety play hedge kind of thing, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But I think with normal stuff, people need to be very careful. This isn't the time to be going gung-ho and going crazy.
No.
Cheap can get a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I honestly think we've got, you know, you got a couple of months of a window to buy stuff here, so there's no rush to wade in, you know. Yeah.
And nibble, you know, you can always buy more later.
Yeah,
you don't need to put all your money in today, you know.
That, do you know what? That's now an essential part of my investment. I never, ever, I allocate a certain percentage of my portfolio, say 5, you know, max, if it's a big cap stock, or maximum 10%, and then I will split that in 3, and I'll take the first chunk, maybe. And if I'm more worried, I'll split into 5 and say, right, I have 5 shots at this. And, there we are. So, okay. Marlison, well, listen, I'll put a link to your blog so people can read your stuff there because I know you diarise everything you do. And speak soon, fella.
Thanks. Nice one. Cheers, Justin. Take it easy, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waits.
And joining me right now on the podcast is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. You're right, Al?
I'm good, Just. Looks like it is definitely go away in May, though.
Yes, and you've gone away to the toilet by the sounds of it.
Yes, I'm sorry if I sound as though down at the bottom of a long shaft, to use a mining analogy, but yes, unfortunately, my headset seems to have packed in. I can't get it working, so I'm doing it on the open mic, so I'll shut all the doors. Hope that there are no doorbells ringing or no phone calls. And anyway,
okay, well,
I apologise for the echo.
That's all right. I mean, do you know what? After last summer, I was, I don't know, wise enough, but I used my Google calendar there, and I put about four or five reminders in for this April saying, get ready to top slice, take some cash, you know, get some cash in. And I sort of, I stuck by that, and I did come out. So I'm sort of sitting a little bit pretty, waiting for the uncertainty to wear off after Brexit and seeing it as a bit of a buying opportunity, you know, because I do think the markets will come round after the summer, you know.
I think so too. Likewise, I also cut my holdings down too. I did add to one of my oil holdings, but overall, I've cut out my sort of exposure to financials and got some defensives in there, which seem to be holding up okay. The miners don't seem to be too badly affected, so I'm maintaining exposure there for now. Although if it drops much lower, then I'll jump out. But also, there are some dividend days coming up for Shell, of course, as well. So you know that's well worth holding on for.
Yeah, I think is it May 20. I think is the Shell dividend.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so all right, marvellous. Well, what's your mate? So we had him on, Black Cabbie Trader. What's he up to? Is he doing well? We got to get him back on actually in about a few weeks' time. What's he doing?
Yes, indeed. Well, members will know if they've been to the listeners will know if they've been to the site. But John publishes some trading ideas across his Rootmaster blog, which is the blog for All and Sundry to view on a daily basis, and on his knowledge on the knowledge subscription site, he is actually trading a portfolio, and one of his picks last week was Barrick Gold, and he's now about 7 or 8% up on that trade, and he's the stop losses on the other stocks that he's trading in that portfolio have moved up slightly too. So overall, it's looking very strong. So
yeah,
good start for John.
Yeah, and I got to point out, John was a full time black cab driver, and then he won that City Index, I think, Trading Academy competition. He bagged himself $100,000, didn't he?
He got $100,000 cash, a suitcase of cash, which he sort of left the building in a hurry and took it down to the bank. But it's a great story, and he just has developed the system after winning the competition. He's seen fairly frequently on TV, and also obviously he's been on the podcast too. But John has just got a real no-nonsense approach. It's a mechanical system. He doesn't lose sleep over it because he sets the trades and he sets the stops according to what the charts tell him, and uses a series of indicators on that. And that's the way he's traded since. And he's making probably about 15 to 20% per annum. Which, if you're making that consistently, then you can look around in 10 years' time at an initial investment of £50,000 to £100,000, and you've got a very nice portfolio.
Yeah, do you know what? Its system is very good, because I like it because it does take the emotion out of trading, and some people may think this is odd, but it's like, I'll give an example today. I hold AsiaMet Resources, and I do want the opportunity to top up at lower levels. And today, oddly, I had a stop loss in 10% below where I sort of last bought, and a limit order, I mean, below where I last bought. And it dropped today, but 8.9%, and it tripped out that limit order, so it filled my order, then jumped back up to flat. And I thought, well, I would have done that if I manually was looking at the share price. I wouldn't have done that, and yet for that trade I'm now up, and then within seconds it was back to flat after I bought. So taking the emotion out of it works, and having a strategy to do that also works, obviously.
If you have a mechanical system that is trading those, the stock then becomes an instrument. You don't look at it as a stock anymore. It's just purely an instrument on which your scans are telling you to buy at a certain level, and that's the beauty of John's system. It really does allow you to get on with the rest of your life, which is what he says. Also, for members who sign up to the knowledge, we're holding an inaugural Get the Knowledge seminar in quarter three. There'll be several trading VIPs along, and also a surprise celebrity guest as well. So just to whet your appetite there.
All right. Is it Donald Trump?
he's doing quite well at the moment, isn't he?
Okay, so what stock are you looking at the moment, Al?
Okay, well, this is one we looked at back in February, Jus. It's... you know, it's the old fancy takeaway job, Just Eat. Now, we looked at Just Eat on 10th of Feb. The stock price was £3.35. And I highlighted, you know, it's very much an Uber for the takeaway food business. I don't need to tell listeners how well Domino's Pizza have done over the last 5-10 years. It's just gone from strength to strength, and it's a huge industry. Just Eat, I think, is even better because it straddles all aspects of takeaway food. So whether you want Chinese, Indian, whatever, you can go to through your Just Eat app, and you can order it directly from your local restaurant. It's a great idea. Now, the business is scaling up and growing rapidly. £3.35 we discussed on the 10th of Feb. It's now £4.08. The stock rose yesterday after the group provided a quarter one trading update. The company has said that it's doing so well in quarter one. Quarter one sales growth is up 57% year on year, which is pretty similar to the previous year too. It's completed its acquisition of Spain's food businesses in Spain. It's also got businesses in Italy, Mexico, Brazil, and other areas in Europe. It's also only a 0.1% increase on its commission rate from the restaurants, which if you scale that up over all the restaurants the group owns is pretty considerable. So on the back of that, it's raised its guidance for the full year. Full year EBITDA expected at 98 million, now up to 102.5 million. And revenues expected at 350 million, now up to 358 million for the year. And given the way they're going and their progress, I wouldn't bet against them increasing the guidance once again during the current financial year. So it's a well-run business. It's an eminently scalable business. And also, this was the first company into this area. There are others now that you'll see if you travel around London advertising the same sort of service, but Just Eat were the first there. They've got the market share, they've got the lion's share, and they are the ones, this is the company that all the others are aiming to be. So Just Eat, £4.08. Yeah, it's a fairly racy valuation, but the stock's already been as high as £5.25 this year. So if it carries on like this, there's no reason really that it shouldn't recapture those year highs and maybe push beyond that.
Yeah, and I think you missed the most important thing, that brain drill of an annoying advert that's really catchy.
Yes.
I see you, baby, chicken madras. And yeah. That is, do you know what, perfect. No, but actually, do you know, it's one of those things that's just annoying. Some people love it, some people hate it. And it's one of those things that drills itself in your brain and it gives them complete awareness, you know? And it's almost it's taken over that song now. So anyone humming that song will sing that song, Chicken Madras, and you think, who's that? And, you know, Just Eat will come to the forefront of people's minds. They're spot on with that ad, I think. Very clever. And just, you know, it's the kind of thing that kids will sing. And, you know, when you want some food or something, that'll come to your head. And it's perfect. I think the marketing is spot on with that, don't you think?
It's great marketing, isn't it? It's all about mobile apps, you know, and it's spur of the moment stuff to take away. You know, we all know that feeling where, oh, what's in the fridge for tonight? Oh, God, baked potatoes again. Tell you what, let's get a chicken madras. And all of a sudden the mood's lifted and everyone's fist is pumped. Well, I don't know. Maybe not. But anyway, the marketing spot on, the mobile app spot on. I think this company's got an awful lot of mileage still to deliver to investors.
Yeah, do you know what? It's one of those things like, you know, the right moves where they are got first mover advantage that people see as always overpriced or ASOS, you know, always overpriced. But because they got first mover advantage, they'll always be king in the tree and they'll always gain ground. And so it's one of the things to buy on a bit of weakness, you know, and just ignore the valuations because, like I said, they'll get to the stage where no one can compete with it. So, you know, the valuations are going to be sky high because, you know, it's earned that right to be that sky high.
It's earned that right, exactly. And it's growing at such a rate of knots that that valuation could get even more racy. But, you know, with justification, if you look at how the company is growing today, look at the upgrades, the guidance upgrades it's delivered consistently to date, and it'll give you some clues to where the company's going.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm a big fan of this company.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? You've made me hungry, Al, and do you know I fancy?
Fancy takeaway, Justin.
Yeah, marvellous. Yeah, lovely, Al. Speak soon. Thanks, fella.
Thanks, Jess. All the best. Cheers.
That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Apart from to say, this very podcast, episode 472, is dedicated to the one, the only, Sierra 117, who gave me a 5-star review and this rating on iTunes. This was the title, Great Podcast. Thanks, fella. Thank you very much. Been an avid listener for a while. Great insights and a range of topics covered. Would definitely recommend. CEO interviews provide the opportunity to submit your own questions ahead of the show and to learn more about businesses in general. An invaluable free resource. Keep up the good work, Justin. Thank you very much for that. You know what? It makes it worthwhile. Honestly, when I get a nice review like that, it does make it. Cause it's showing. It proves, you know, gives value. And it's like, it's free. A bit like the Vox Market app. It's free. Get it. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Download it now. It's free. Are you crazy? Yeah. Thanks for listening. Much appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.